Hello and welcome back to the EG Way, and this is another special episode. I know I say that every week, I'm sorry, it's a thing, but of course this week we are not in EG's boardroom in sunny Ipswich. It is sunny, but it's sunny here where I'm recording from my spare room, and it's probably sunny where everyone else is, recording from their home offices and spare rooms as well, because we are in lockdown right about now. But that isn't going to stop the EG Way podcast. No, nothing can stop the power of the podcast. We are still going strong. So, dialing in remotely from all over the east of England, we have got a crack team of experts on the tech scene here, and that includes Tim Robinson, who is the CEO of Tech East.
Hello, thanks very much for having me on the podcast.
That's great. It's good to have you. It's good to have you along in these difficult times. It's nice to reach out and connect with people. And on that front, I'd also like to welcome Andy Narayan Barrow, who is from the Hethel Innovation Centre. Hi, Andy.
Hello, thanks for having me.
It's great. And of course, joining us as well, as always, a familiar voice on the EG Way podcast, it's Chris Pont, CEO and co-founder of EG.
Hello, hi.
Hey, it's good to connect. And joining us from Tech Nation, it is Taya. Good luck. Taya is the Entrepreneur Engagement Officer for the East of England. Hello, Taya.
Thank you very much for having me.
And I'm Andrew Walker. And yes, you know me now on the EGWay. I'm a freelance writer. And today is a very special recording because I'm not wearing any trousers. Good. So, well, I mean, you don't need to, right? If you're on the Zoom, you can only see me from the waist up. Tim, this is actually quite a good place for us to start, right? Because we're doing remote calling now, and a lot of people are working from home. In fact, the whole country's in lockdown. So presumably you've got some opinions about the role the tech scene can play in trying to help us deal with the current sort of virus situation.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, I think that's a good way to sort of lead into this whole, you know, this whole discussion about Tech Nation report and sort of where the tech scene is going in the, you know, in the medium to long term. But, you know, in terms of the short term, clearly there are a lot of businesses out there, small and micro businesses, but also sort of more isolated communities in parts of the east of England, where a lot of people are probably feeling quite shell-shocked and not confident and used to some of the technologies that perhaps we in the tech sector take for granted, like the one we're using right now. And so I think there's a real sort of responsibility actually for all of us who are involved in tech to help our friends and family and people running businesses to kind of get up to speed with some of the platforms that are available. Show what's possible. I mean, I've been very impressed over the last sort of 2 days as to how quickly people in the organizations in the tech sector are moving to this sort of virtual environment. But I'm sure it's not the case everywhere. And so I think that's important sort of basic hygiene factor, if you like. But in terms of the next few months, really, digital platforms, by their very nature, because they don't involve actually being face-to-face and we're all having to distance from each other socially, are really important, whether that's, virtual tools for doctor's surgeries or remote workers or, other sort of really important critical cases where tech will be used. And, I'm really pleased at how I'm seeing businesses in our community step up.
Andy, coming to you, you're working up there in Hethel at an innovation centre, but of course you're not going to be there today because of the lockdown. What's the impact of the current situation like up there at somewhere that's usually a hub of activity?
Yeah, it's quite interesting, actually, because we very rapidly moved to remote working in terms of the business development team last week. So I'm actually into my second week of remote working now. So I haven't been to the centre for the past week. And from what I'm hearing, it's becoming less and less of a physical hive of activity and more of a, phones are being used more, obviously, and then everyone's moving more to remote working solutions like what we're doing at the moment. I think it's interesting. It's an interesting challenge because we have around 40 tenants there, and then we have some are virtual tenants and some are physical tenants, and they have an interesting challenge of where they can move to remote, they are able to, but then there are also people in the building who physically manufacture stuff, and that's a massive challenge for them. Can you move any of that to remote? And there's plenty of technology kind of in the region available to kind of go down the road of robotics and AI, but because the situation has like come upon us so quickly, it's actually really hard to implement that in a very, very quick turnaround. So I think there's quite a few tenants there who are having difficulties with trying to turn a physical manufacturing line or, you know, physical improvements to things in the automotive sector or in the energy sector. And then suddenly they are now being pushed to work from home where possible. And I think that's actually quite a big challenge for a lot of our tenants.
Chris, I mean, you are obviously heading up a team that creates software. So you are, very capable, I suppose, of working remotely. But your clients, on the other hand, like building societies and people like that, they operate physically, right? So you must be helping them solve similar challenges to the ones Andy raised.
Yeah, kind of. I think, many of those clients are moving to a more remote way of working. Building societies, etc. They've got those challenges, but that's in the stores themselves. In terms of the software delivery, so the things that we're working on with them, they tend to be more digital implementations, and therefore we're having to find new ways of being able to have that interaction with our clients remotely. So running workshops in particular over Microsoft Teams or over Zoom. It is a challenge, whereas normally we'd be filling rooms full of post-it notes and, having those physical in-person workshops, and it's something that we are advocates for. Being able to do that remotely is a challenge. Our team have actually been able to adjust to that, and we actually ran a workshop for a brand new client that we've never even met in person. The contracts were signed, the negotiation, the proposals were all prepared remotely last week, and we ran our first workshop. The CEO was cautious of that. He thought it wasn't going to go that well, but by the end of the day, he was pretty impressed, and he found that they were able to portray their requirements over a remote session. We were able to work with them, and we were able to progress as usual.
And was this a design sprint? Was it that kind of 5-day clickable prototype journey?
Similar. It was an inception workshop. So where we'd be sort of negotiating on scope, and where we would be sort of talking about high-level feature backlogs and trying to map out the early stages of a project delivery. Normally we'd be moving post-it notes around the walls, doing things in a very visual way. We've had to find more remote and more online ways of achieving the same goal.
Taya, tell us more. What did you discover talking to founders about what the tech industry needs right now to, be more effective in the crisis?
Yeah, I think obviously there's policies are coming out every day, so keeping on top of that is quite a mission. But key examples are, for earlier stage companies, there's a bit of a gap from a lending perspective. Maybe the government needs to look at providing convertible loans or some sort of lending facilities for people that are more in the startup spectrum of things. I think a lot of founders said that they wouldn't be able to apply for the British Business Bank loan, for example, because they weren't generating revenue, essentially. So I think on the lending side, there's a big piece that the government needs to look at. Also, for example, in the ecosystem, obviously co-working spaces are a massive part of that, and those that are smaller and more independent don't fall into the business rates relief bracket. So we've been pushing to temporarily classify those businesses as hospitality instead, so that then they're exempt. So things like that, really practical, tangible examples. And actually our CEO, Gerard, did a really good piece in Forbes recently, which I've shared on my LinkedIn, but also happy to share the link. And that outlined at this stage 5 key policies, which, lending, the piece around co-working spaces, R&D, tax relief, you know, making that stronger at the moment so that those companies that are innovating and supporting this crisis can do so with the funding that they need. So, yeah, we're proactively gathering that data all the time, feeding it directly back into government. But obviously, new policies are coming all the time.
Your job is very social. It's all about person-to-person engagement, all of that. How have you found this shift? I know we're only, you know, just a little way into the sort of social isolation period. But you must have had to think pretty fast about new ways to capture that social connection, that personal connection that's so important in your work.
Yeah, I think, as I said, you know, Zoom, using video conferencing and making sure that you both do have the video on, for example, is quite important. And just we've just really cracked on with our meetings, making sure we're not using it as not an excuse, but, you know, there's no reason it can't go ahead. You can still have a productive conversation. And I think we just have to use that technology where it's there. With the Tech Nation report, as an example, you know, that was very early on in the change of things, and it was all changing super fast. We used a platform called Hopin, which was a live event streaming platform. It has all the networking elements. So at the end of it, people randomly got connected to someone else and could then have that conversation. Yeah, it's not the same as kind of doing over a glass of wine at the end of an event, but we've got to work with what we've got. And I think, as I mentioned before, you know, we already work super flexibly because we're covering the region, we're out and about, we're on the road. So it was never that kind of 9-to-5 office based job. But I think we just have to use the video conferencing equipment basically to keep cracking on with the meetings and getting out there.
Weirdly, do you think it might actually make us more social? Because I've since this has been the sort of the new normal, I've actually connected and reconnected with people who maybe I saw once in a blue moon, you know, at an event, or I'd seen them in London, maybe if we all sort of coincided around the same pub, or, you know, our diaries matched up. Whereas now, actually, yeah, one of my former colleagues has set up a Friday night drinks and everyone drops into it. And although we're all sort of Zooming in remotely, it actually had a really positive effect on my social life, because it was people who I normally didn't see at all, and it was really nice. Do you think that's a possibility? Do you think this might make us more social in the long term?
I think it might well do, and I think it definitely, if you think about it from an event perspective as well, it definitely breaks down the barriers in terms of, obviously it breaks down the barriers in terms of location. So we're talking about that a lot, you know, where we're previously might have held an event in Cambridge, for example, or in Norfolk. That's difficult for more people to come to, but now it's all online. Actually, that can become a UK-wide event, you know, and I think it does open things up a lot more. And also, I just think from a practical perspective, we've all got probably a lot more time in our day, albeit that, you know, some of us have young children at home, but you're not having all that travel time. So I certainly feel like we can learn a lot in the ways that we work and make sure we're as effective now as we were when prior to this situation.
Now, one interesting thing that emerged from the report is that fintech is the biggest part of the sort of tech scene here in the East. But there's also a growth in the sort of life sciences and the bio side of things. And also in AI, that was an interesting one. You don't immediately think of Suffolk and Norfolk and then think AI, but actually outside London, this is one of the biggest places where you're going to find yourself working in an AI company, right?
Yeah, that's right. And I think AI is not just one thing. It's a bundle of different technologies, which, you know, include, you know, things at the more sort of machine learning and data analytics side, through to voice recognition software, and clearly in areas like self-driving and driverless cars, there are lots of applications of it. I mean, one of the features I think of, you know, East of England is that there's a really sort of strong network of both research intensive universities and industrial R&D. So think about BT Martlesham on the outskirts of Ipswich, file a huge number of AI patents annually, in particularly in networks and telecom sector. But you know, up in Norfolk, we've got up in Norwich. You know, there are some great AI companies like Rainbird, Ubisend, who do chatbots. There are applications of AI going on around Norwich Research Park in agri-food. So it's pretty diverse. And certainly, if you look at the TechNation report numbers, AI is a massive strength in the UK. And although the East of England might not always be associated with that, it's true that it's a very important feature of our tech ecosystem.
So we are now sort of in a situation where, you know, things are looking uncertain, and, you know, we've got challenges clearly ahead. But obviously, if you're going to be at university right now, you've also got some challenges ahead. But, you know, coming out of that, presumably there is a growth in jobs and opportunities in the tech sector here in the East of England. So, Andy, I mean, working in an innovation centre, you've got a lot of startups, presumably, and smaller companies coming in there. Is it a sort of a destination for graduates? Are we seeing a sort of, you know, feed of people coming in there who are graduating with tech degrees in this part of the world?
Yeah, absolutely, because what we're quite fortunate to have is we have a fair amount of companies who are started by experienced people. And then when they move into places like our centre and other incubation centres, what they tend to do is then recruit graduates who have the most up-to-date kind of learning in terms of new skills and new technologies and softwares, whatever it is you're doing. Then you can combine that with someone who has a bit of the business acumen and everything. And that kind of that marrying together of those two sections is actually really interesting to see, especially with the tenants that we have at some of our sites.
So tell us about them. I mean, what's the sort of spread you've got there? Because I know you've got some biotech there, and obviously you've got automotive. What else is going on at Hethel?
Yeah, so we have the history of automotive there, as we are on the same field as Lotus, and the centre was built in 2006 to really try and capture that expertise that was coming out of Lotus. But nowadays we have a lot more kind of clean tech businesses there. Like you were saying, biotech businesses there. We have a company that is looking at a new way of 3D printing peptide pills for the pharmaceutical industry. We have a company there that is taking batteries from recycling. They are recycling batteries from inside. I think it's the Renault Zoe, and turning them into shipping container size batteries that can be deposited on site. So suddenly we've got battery storage options that are being effectively manufactured in the East of England, which is an area that kind of, you know, is known for lack for connectivity issues. So a lot of the companies there are addressing issues that, as well as global, do actually affect local people, which is part of the pleasure of being able to be around those businesses all the time and see what they're coming up with day to day.
So as well, Chris, I wanted to ask you, because you've, you know, established EG in Ipswich, you're one of the sort of leading lights of the sort of developer community in the East of England. And you've also been involved with the Innovate Suffolk Hackathon, which sadly has been postponed as well, but will be coming back, yeah, as we know. And you've connected up with a lot of the companies around where you are. So, I mean, there's a good tech network, good support network out in this part of the world.
Yeah, I think that's the great thing about the East of England at the moment is that tech community is growing. People are getting to know each other. People seem to be more, they're happier to connect, share experience, share expertise, and ask for help. So, you know, it's been great to be a part of that. It's been great to share ideas, to work out how we deal with this current crisis, what tools people are using, and you know, I'm making use of as many of those tips as I can right now for sort of staying connected with my team. Things like being very visible, creating video updates, you know, making sure that people's cameras are on, having daily Teams huddles just to talk about life in general rather than project updates, which tends to be what everyone refers back to nowadays. You know, you need for sort of mental health reasons, you need to be able to just sort of have a catch up with your team and just talk about anything, just socialize for half an hour every day. So it's those sort of tips that, you know, I'm certainly gathering from other tech businesses in the area. And obviously we can't have the face-to-face meetings that we usually would with sort of the innovation Multisham breakfasts and some of the Tech East, Tech and Toast meetings and things like that. But, you know, hopefully I've seen that Tech East in particular are doing some virtual sessions now, which is great for just staying in touch with the community, you know, making sure that you've got those video feeds on, making sure that you're seeing people and staying up to date with what people are doing to tackle those problems.
So Tim, on that front, I mean, presumably it's times like this when organizations like Tech East have a really important role to play to sort of connect to people together, not just from a sort of business sort of development point of view, but in terms of their actual well-being and the sort of social aspects of you know, keeping the tech community healthy and engaged at times like this. I mean, actually, I say that. We've never had times like this before, right? So you must find yourself in an unusual situation at the same time.
Yes, I suppose. I mean, although it is unusual, I mean, in some ways, I mean, I've been quite surprised and pleased over the last few days at how quickly the community has kind of adapted to the new normal of remote, you know, sort of remote networking. And I've been on two or three different, you know, using different platforms, but different meetings hosted by very different groups. So what, you know, one very much for small businesses, one for tech businesses in Cambridge this morning. We're starting running Tech and Toast virtual from Friday morning, which is we're going to be using the Zoom platform for. And although, you know, some of these things are a bit rough around the edges as an experience, I mean, the big advantage with virtual is it doesn't really matter where you are. So even in the east of England, which isn't a huge place, it's still we found it quite challenging, for example, to get people going up from Ipswich to Norwich for some of our meetups, or from Norwich to Cambridge. Whereas with the online meetups, I mean, hopefully we can bring that wider community together that Chris was talking about, you know, bringing more people together and seeing that actually we're better off, you know, the strength in numbers.
I think that's the interesting thing at the moment is that people are being forced to adopt new habits and new ideas, new technology. And what's happening right now, I think, is going to change the way that people work, interact and socialize forever, even after all this blows over. So it's interesting to see that, you know, those new sort of remote meetups, etc., are being used, and hopefully they continue long after this has all settled down, and that we have that ability to have a much wider field when we network, when we interact, and when we chat about new ideas.
I'm going to pause it there. That feels like a good place to stop this week, because we're kind of running out of time, and also that is a very positive note to end on in these uncertain times. And we will be back with Tim and Andy and Chris and Taya in a little while to talk more about the role of technology in the East of England and the role that the UK tech sector is going to play, hopefully, in the economic recovery and economic reboot that's going to be coming, obviously, after the end of such an intense period of disruption. So all that really remains for me is to say thank you to Taya Goodluck.
You are more than welcome. Thank you.
Thank you very much to Tim Robinson.
Thank you very much.
And to say thank you to Andy Narayan Barrow.
My pleasure. Thanks, guys.
And thanks again, of course, to Chris Pond.
Cheers. Bye.
And do join us again on the EGWay. We will be back talking about the tech sector again. In the meantime, you'll be able to find us online on Twitter at EG Limited and at EG.com. And do look for us on LinkedIn as well. We've got our LinkedIn page there. It's LinkedIn/EG-Limited. And in the meantime, stay safe, connect with people, use your digital tools, and we will see you all again soon. Okay, bye-bye.